we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
What happens when facts catch up with hope? This is especially true in the most recent days, as we have found a big court decision that has overturned what was at the time the understanding of what we thought was in the womb in 1973, and how facts about what's really there and what a baby feels, pain, cognizance, heartbeat, all those things, all the facts, or what we would call the reality of the case, caught up with what was at the time, you could call it a paradigm, you could call it hope, of what the justices knew. And again, that's one of the problems in dealing in an area like science and medicine, is a lot of times what we suppose to be the truth, once we have technology to evaluate, the facts change on the ground, and that requires policymakers to really admit being wrong, which unfortunately they are most of the time incapable of doing. So, Stuart, what do you think about that?
I think with the subject that we're going to bring up today revolves around that core issue with Dr. Burke's testimony before Congress. But I was listening to the arguments about the Mississippi case a couple of months ago, and the hope, the despair, really, of the liberal justices in their questioning was revelatory beyond words, in a way, because what they were basing their hope, their despair on, really is a disgust for life. They just seem to have fundamentally a disgust for what our country was founded on: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The first one, you can't have the other two without the first. And I guess you could say that about the others, but life, so fundamental to how we look at things, we just ignore it all the time. But here they were. Here these couple of justices were, and it's just so sad that they could take the view that they had, clearly ignoring the evidence, clearly ignoring the real science, clearly ignoring, it doesn't have to be science, it could be the metaphysics, the theory that the justices 50 years ago ignored clearly. But where does that come from? I think we can delve into another time. But fundamentally, the idea that hope catches up with reality, and I think that the Christian paradigm is the only one that is consistent.
I would agree. There is one hope that will be fulfilled with reality, and that is the one true hope, which is that Jesus is coming back, and he has died on the cross for our sins and rose again. And so that is one hope. Again, we use the word hope here in its probably in its limited form, as man uses it, when we talk about things that are not eternal.
So, yes. To bring that full circle, I would just remind us of what Jesus said to to Pontius Pilate. When Pontius Pilate, he was thrown before Pontius Pilate, and he asked him a bunch of questions, and Jesus refused to answer until the end. He said, "It is true that you say I'm the king of the Jews. I came to testify to the truth." His truth and his hope are consistent. Outside of that, not so much.
So what I want us to listen to real quick is a clip that was Jim Jordan actually questioning Deborah Burks. If you'll remember, Deborah Burks was the blonde-haired scarf lady that was part of the press conferences quite often with Anthony Fauci. She was a, as she described herself, a underling and lover of all things Fauci. She actually was, cut her teeth in the HIV pandemic with Dr. Fauci. Again, it still just blows me away that the people that we entrusted with the response to the HIV pandemic and how amazingly inadequate and completely just lacking any usefulness, integrity on reevaluation of what they did, and basically a complete failure. These are the people that we call back to the front lines when we need a response for this coronavirus pandemic. So here again is Jim Jordan questioning Deborah Birx.
You're an expert. You were on the task force. You were part of this effort when you were in the previous administration. And you're saying in this administration that you can't rule out the fact that our government was lying to us when they told us the vaccinated could not get the virus.
I don't know about their discussions that they had in the task force. So I can't tell you that. I can tell you as a family member who had individuals that were susceptible, of course, we got everybody vaccinated. But we still use layered protection during surges because I knew potentially the vaccine immunity would wane like natural immunity waned. And there was evidence that every 4 months, reinfection was occurring in South Africa.
Wow. When the government told us that the vaccinated couldn't transmit it, was that a lie or was that a guess? Or is it the same answer?
I think it was hope that the vaccine would work in that way. And that's why I think scientists and public health leaders always have to be at the table, very clear what we know and what we don't know.
This is important for the country to know. So when I asked the question, when the government told us that the vaccinated couldn't get it, and I asked you if it was a guess or a lie, you said you don't know. You said you think it was hope. So what we do know is it wasn't the truth. So they were either guessing, lying, or hoping and communicating that information to the citizens of this country.
I think they were hoping, but you should know in those original phase 3 trials that were done in this country that we only measured for symptomatic disease. So we weren't proactively testing everybody in those trials to see if they got infected with mild or asymptomatic disease. And so people had to present within the clinical trial.
We never
had the data that it was going to protect against asymptomatic infection.
I'm just struck with the irony. We got government agencies guessing, hoping, or lying with the information they're presenting to the American people. And this is the same administration that wants to set up the disinformation governance board and wants to talk about misinformation. And they're the biggest purveyors of misinformation, false information, hopeful information, but not accurate and true information, which is, again, the frustration I think so many of the folks I get the privilege of representing have shared with me.
What's so interesting about that is that we are talking about a lady who was pretty involved in telling us to go get vaccinated. Not specifically. I think at the time she had stepped down. She had stepped down from her position. I'm not really sure exactly when, but around the time that the vaccine came out and Trump was on his way out and Biden was on his way in, Birx was still in some of those positions. She knew, and it was pretty evident. Not only that, I do respect her for being honest about it, that this was not what they promised or what they, I mean, this is something that basically they were recommending be mandated throughout the country in the hope that it would work against, stopping spread. Okay, stopping infection. Yet in the same sentence, she knew that it didn't. So how do you hope at the same time that you know the opposite is an interesting mental hurdle that I'm not really sure I would be able to jump over. But what do you think, Stuart?
Yeah, exactly. It's very telling. And more of these, I predict more and more of these kind of crazy get out of jail cards that they want to try and pull. The good thing you mentioned it. She at least she was honest. Well, unlike Fauci, who has repeatedly lied under oath, I think part of her conscience says, be careful, tread lightly, do not make such bold statements like you did in public statements and like your task force and your group did from the leadership, the pinnacle of leadership in this crisis. You are found wanting. Your explanation of being hopeful, yet declaring the things that y'all declared are reprehensible and deadly, unfortunately. I think it's very interesting that they hoped the vaccines wouldn't work. We know ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and these other agents do work. The evidence is clear that our agents work and theirs do not. Our agents are safe. Their agents are not. It's very interesting that she was so honest.
Yeah, but even then, I would say one thing she did not allow us to do was hope. She was allowed to hope.
that's a great
point. At their point, evidently, if their side was hoping and our side was not allowed to hope at all, which I would argue, I mean, again, we're talking about medicines that we were using that were safe, well-known, long history of usage in multiple different purviews, countries, age groups. At minimum, they cause no harm. So I would say there is one place where I would say that hope is fine. Hope is fine with the consent and discussion with your patient, as well as your medical understanding of what the harm might be. And I think there are things that I would say we probably probably surgeons and especially in oncology do more than often is, hey, well, let's go and try and hope that we get rid of this disease by doing a resection. I don't have any data on it necessarily, but it in this case, I think it's the most reasonable thing to do. That's very different than saying that we know something or saying that we know it works and then never even informing or even having the information to inform the patient of the downside. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. They were hopeful. We were not allowed to be. People on our side looking at the science, the evidence that continues to come out that varies and is different than theirs, we were not allowed to have hope in the science. They were the definers of it, of course, and we had to come on board with the threat of our license and other harsh penalties. You know about the doctor up in Maine who has been ordered by the court to undergo psychiatric counseling or evaluation. This is just amazing or preachers who were put in prison. This is amazing testimony. I'm so glad you brought it today for us to discuss.
Yeah. I think when people hear that, they're surprised on what she admits versus what they were led to believe. I think that would be a very common thing within the, what I would say, lay community. I think we knew this when looking at the trials, that these trials were quite inadequate, even though they were ballyhooed as, the most amazing things to ever happen. We knew from a vaccine standpoint that a 2-month trial on a very limited set of people with very interesting cutoffs and interesting data.
With new technology.
Yeah. Not yet. Even ignoring that, let's say you did the trial with something that was, I mean, it was just, they were set up in a way to basically almost produce results that were unbelievable. And in many ways, it's exactly what they did. I mean, they produced something that couldn't stand up to scrutiny or really real world, most of the time in trials, they're not as perfect as we'd like, but we always know the trial is going to be a little bit, because again, you get to select your patients, you get to kick out the ones that probably will muddy the data. So they're always going to be a little bit overstatement, but I would say overstating something that's 95% down to, oh, yeah, we actually knew it didn't work. it's pretty amazing. And then the other amazing thing is that even after that testimony, that the product is still mandated for our service members, mandated in many countries, mandated for healthcare providers working in a hospital, knowing what she said, and that they were able to sign off on that, meaning they were signing off on something they knew would provide no benefit to what they were trying to do. Again, I guess that's a political answer. I mean, I would say most of the things politicians do, they do just to say they did it, not because they actually think it'll work. But it's very different when you're requiring people to inject themselves or even put themselves in harm's way. So that's pretty disgusting to me. When we come back, I want to talk about something else that came out, which is a French study about myocarditis and pericarditis, which I think is pretty revealing too. Again, it goes to what we've been told versus what's the reality. But Stuart, when you think of Burks, I think she is somebody that probably Fauci picked or put in place, because I really think he was able to kind of run over her. That's my perception. It's, you know, he, you know, picked somebody that was not like an Atlas who countered him, but instead of a sycophant who, you know, kind of looked to Fauci for all her credentials and prestige and really her training. And I think that's a bad setup. You need
people. She was the perfect fool.
Exactly.
You know, you look at the optics of her and her demeanor. It all looks so pleasant and so professional and so sharp. And boy, howdy, has it been revealed for the sickness in a way of our culture. So evident of our culture, this woman thinking that she can stand there up on the microphone, dais next to the president, next to her savior, Dr. Fauci, and make these absurd statements day after day. She was a big part of the PR push going to each of the states. I know she came here and spoke to our governor a couple of times in private meetings, pushing the agenda. She was the perfect image to do that. Fauci, his brazen, obnoxious ways are so off-putting, I would think, to a lot of the governors. They wouldn't be able to tolerate it. But she was the perfect sycophant to send out and give these horrible messages that clearly were based in error or lies, certainly not good hope. But for her to reveal under testimony last week before the Congress that she didn't base her statements off of science, she based them off of hope. It's bewildering that she is not already in prison along with Fauci and others. But that's for another day, hopefully. Maybe it'll take 50 years, kind of like with the Roe v. Wade absurd decision. Maybe it'll take 50 years for us to grapple with the insanity that we've had to tolerate the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I hope it. I hope we change our ways earlier than that. I mean, as Roe v. Wade proved, sacrificing I don't know how many millions of lives at the altar of hope or understanding of some justices in 1973 is pretty anyway. Right. Just that timing. I hope it happens much quicker. In the fall that we, Jim Jordan is, head of judiciary and head, will I be able to call all these people, to give an account, for what their hope has, what the consequence of their hope has been.
Yeah, and I would like to end this session with the summary, I think the epitome of what happened. If we will recall back in the early days, December, January of 2020, a year to the, I bet it was a year to the minute, but a year to the week, a year after, a year to the week after, the passage in the New York General Assembly, in the state government of New York, they passed this abhorrent law that allowed a baby to die. If the mother had intended for the baby to be aborted, the baby survived the abortion attempt, the doctor was obligated not to treat the child because it was the desire of the mother. This is a full-blown, this is a born living human baby made in the image of our Lord and Savior. Why? And then this, and then they passed this law to great celebration. There were cheers in the assembly chamber. And a year to the week, I bet it was to the minute, but a year to the week later was the first death in New York of a COVID patient. Very, very important connections. I think we cannot ignore the spiritual dynamics of this insanity.
All right. Well, we will be back. Again, this is America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead. We are the Concerned Doctors on concerneddoctors.org. This is Dr. Jordan Vaughn and Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We will be back in a moment.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
While many things we hear are lies, we know one thing is true. Viruses exist and people get sick. Look, there's no guaranteed way to keep from getting sick, but there is a way to reduce your chances. Cofix RX, the original povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray that you hear Dr. McCullough talking about, provides an additional, invisible layer of protection from colds, flu, coronaviruses, and more. Click the banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Thank you for joining us again this Tuesday on America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley with Dr. Jordan Vaughn. This week is an exciting week. We're talking about last week's decision on Roe v. Wade reversal and the hope that the people, the absurdity that the justices in 1973 were asserting in order to make such an absurd ruling. We are now in a hopeful time of following the science with that, which dovetails into the reality, not the hopeful reality that has done so much harm that Dr. Birx testified to, but the reality that we are dealing with based in science and truth as to how we are where we are and in this COVID epidemic, pandemic. And today we're going to be discussing an interesting article study out of France that shows us, once again, more and more evidence of the harms, dangers done by these vaccines. And I will introduce that to Jordan, that idea to Jordan here in a second. But I want to remind everyone that back in late December 21, Dr. Robert Malone was on the podcast with Joe Rogan. I think the guy has like 70 million followers or something. It's just some absurd huge number. And he got in trouble because Malone and McCullough previously, a couple of weeks before, had talked about the dangers of the vaccine and the dangers to the heart, especially to the young people, that they were seeing, that the evidence was showing, and that Dr. McCullough was seeing, actually. And they had made the assertion, based in evidence, that these vaccines were dangerous. And you may recall a few months ago, and even several European countries stopped the usage of some of these vaccines in children and people under the age of 30 for for this precise reason. Well, subsequent to that interview at the end of December, Joe Rogan had on this physician. I think she was out of UCLA, but she made a very bright lady who made the assertion. This was a couple of weeks after that interview with Malone, that the children were much more likely to have inflammation of the heart from the virus than they would receive from the vaccine. That seemed incredulous at the time because the limited data that I'd read did not show that at all. And then more studies since then have come to the front. And one of them that we're going to be discussing today, Jordan, if you wouldn't mind discussing with us, bring it to everyone's attention from France.
Well, the first thing I would say is that the lady that was on that Joe Rogan, I think the biggest interesting thing that she probably didn't understand is by the time that she made that pronouncement, probably 80% of children had already had COVID. So again, also dovetailing with Burke, what Burke's just said, that it doesn't prevent infection. I'm not really sure what the heck the point is, right? So again, if the virus does put you at risk, why double your risk by injecting your kid with something that doesn't prevent infection and only gives the risk that is now known? So the interesting thing is most of the studies in our American database, a lot of times done by people that are influenced by the NIH and the pharmaceutical industry, had only shown what they said a almost mild to non-existent risk of myocarditis. And if there was a risk, it was in boys, or what do we call adolescent males. This study kind of blows that out of the water. It is done by Stefan Vu, V-U, and it's actually published in Nature. And what it basically says is not only is that risk significant, it is quite significant, as in an odds ratio. An odds ratio is how much more than if you didn't get it, are you at risk of getting something? So again, if somebody had a 1 in 1,000 chance of getting something, this intervention might increase that to 8 in 1,000. Okay. So when we use these numbers, you should look at it that way. But the Pfizer dose, as well as the Moderna dose, obviously Moderna dose is more mRNA. And again, as Stuart and I have talked about before, the issue is the messenger, or what we would call the instructions to make a protein. And the question would be, where does this go in the body? And then what happens when those cells are told to express a foreign protein? And what we have found in younger adults, probably because their deltoids are more vascular, more muscular, that the lipo-nanoparticles that are encasing this instructions or messenger RNA don't stay in the shoulder. And so when it goes to a place like a heart cell or a pericyte, a pericardial cell, all of a sudden, those cells are told to express a foreign protein. And guess what? Your body is, unlike our democratic government, they attack when things cross the border, and it basically causes inflammation. So that's technically, when we talk about myocarditis, what is myocarditis? Myocarditis is your own body attacking a heart cell, or pericarditis, a pericardial, or the covering of your heart cell. So again, the interesting odds ratio for dose 2 specifically, so not just the first dose, it's about twice as likely. The second dose in Pfizer is 8. The second dose in Moderna is 30. So it's 30 yes. Times, wow. Interestingly enough, the other thing that is interesting in this data is it did matter if you had a history of SARS-CoV-2 infection or COVID infection prior to getting vaccinated. It increased your odds ratio to about your odds ratio was 9, increased because if you had had COVID previously. So again, I think that goes back to our argument, whether I disagree with these injections altogether, but it definitely makes no sense when you're talking about people that have previously had COVID. I think the most interesting thing, and I'll read straight from the paper, is you know, that there is some support of the role of sex hormones in the increased susceptibility for myocarditis of young men compared to women. And we know this when we're actually treat COVID. Me and I actually use an anti-androgen a lot of time, whether that's a finasteride or aldactone, those kind of things. In the acute phase of the disease, it's we found that when we give those to suppress testosterone, that we get a better result. But keeping going, they said, while we do find higher absolute burden of myocarditis and pericarditis in adolescent males and men, we also find that the female counterpart also faces a significant risk, notably of pericarditis for women over 30 years after the second dose of mRNA-1273, which is the Moderna vaccine. And they go, which has not yet been shown. So again, more data is coming out. So it's not just young boys, it's women over 30 that should be worried about pericarditis, which happens to be pretty interesting. It says there are several factors that support the hypothesis of a causal relationship between exposure to mRNA vaccines and the risk of myocarditis and pericarditis. First, the association remains strong even after adjusting for a history of these conditions. So even people who had previously had pericarditis or myocarditis didn't really matter. So they kind of got rid of those, or recent SARS-CoV-2 infection. And in a period which most common respiratory viruses were not widely circulating. So a lot of people had said, well, they're going to get myocarditis anyway. They probably got it from Epstein-Barr or something like that. Controlling for that, again, this still holds. Second, the time that elapsed between exposure to the vaccine and hospitalization was very short for both conditions, which again, that causal relationship, the shorter amount of time between the injection to the actual condition makes that a pretty tight causal relationship that actually increases the likelihood that it is definitely this. And then it said, particularly after the second dose. Third, in most cases, the associations did not persist after 7 days following exposure. And fourth, the stronger risk associated with the second dose and the Moderna vaccine, which contains a larger amount of mRNA, suggest a dose-response relationship. So what they're basically breaking down is kind of the four keys to develop a causal relationship, which is you have to say, all right, let's control for other possibilities. Okay, they did that. Second, let's kind of find out the timing between the exposure and the majority of the issues, which is true. And then the fact that if they increase the dose, it happened more often. So again, Pfizer, is, and here's the crazy thing. Pfizer is, I think 33, micrograms.
30, yeah.
And, Moderna's 100. So what's 8 times 3 there? Stuart, so 8.1 to 30, it's almost, that seems to be pretty dose dependent there.
Right.
And again, that's where, you know, you can't start. You can't really back your way out of a lot of these things. And I think at least the French and the Europeans have realized that the benefits do not, and really have never, they may have during the first Wuhan strand or the Alpha and Wuhan strand in people that were exceedingly old. So people over 70, you could have made that argument for a very short time. I'm not, and I think actually, that would be, we could make the argument that the risk were higher because they didn't have access to treatment because they were, if you were to add in the ability for people to be treated properly when they got COVID, I think the risk of death would have been, because again, in these studies, they don't include people that were treated. You know, when you're in this study and you get COVID, it's not like, oh, and then they were put on proper protocol for treatment, as a comparative. Because to me, when you talk about death or you talk about hospitalization, or the question to me would be, well, what did you do when they got COVID to prevent hospitalization and death? And if it's nothing, then I would argue that it's probably, unethical. Wouldn't you say, Stuart?
We've never taken this approach before, and we were never trained to take this approach before, but we clearly have gone down this road of insanity in so many ways with all of this.
So, again, we're talking about, I guess, a hope that, again, in vaccines, and a lot of people would say, and I use this a lot, is if you never visit a crime scene, you will never have evidence. So it is true. I think the scientific community or the research or medical industrial complex community, they don't want you. They don't, first of all, they don't want to be forced to go to the scene of the crime. And I don't necessarily blame them for that. I mean, I kind of do, but.
Well, if they're hopeful, if they're once again hopeful, they won't find something, you know, it gives them an idea of why not to go look.
But the job of our regulators is to visit the crime scene and get evidence. And they're not doing that. It's taking these European countries that I don't think have as much of a financial or government relationship with these companies to be more circumspect in recommending this to younger generations, especially. But it doesn't take a genius to figure out that something that has a higher risk than was purported, and it doesn't really benefit the child who's already had COVID. That's the other thing that's come out this week, is when we look at immunity, previous immunity, that it is not only much more important, it looks like prior immunity mixed with a vaccine, which would be hybrid immunity. There's a couple studies recently that have shown that kind of actually even messes up original immunity, which is not a great thing to be doing either. So this,
yeah, when we come back, I'll mention that when we come back in a little bit.
So what do you, Stuart? I mean, this again goes back to that. The hope is, oh my, and I feel like even we were talking about this last week, it's because I think our politicians and our leaders have promised the vaccine, that the converts of the vaccine church, which are a lot of people that are still probably wearing masks and walking around in fear most days, they, not from an actual reality standpoint, but from a hope standpoint, the only way that they can emerge from their psychosis, in a sense, is that their kids are also receiving this protection that they hope works. And I think that's where, again, medicine is, you know, there is one thing I will say is hope on the patient's part does matter, that there's a hope in something working, but balance and really circumspect and knowledge is what the physician should realize, especially when what they're suggesting could harm.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That would be the normal course of approach to a medical scientific issue, is not hope based on, I mean, I don't even understand. When she was talking about it, I was like, but what was she hopeful of? Think about that. What was she truly hopeful of? That she wouldn't be found to be a fool?
I think that's where politicians and medicine don't intersect. I think a lot of these administrative people, how they evaluate a success has been tainted by politics, you know, poll numbers.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I think if you look at their media communications and people believing that it worked, at least for the short term, they actually were pretty effective, but we're not talking about poll numbers. We're talking about reality. Again, that's where it's different. And I think that's what a lot of these administrative and scientists like Fauci, they really do believe poll numbers as opposed to trial numbers.
Yeah. Yes. You know, what's interesting about that, this didn't occur to me before, but I genuinely, you know, you have to like the demeanor of Dr. Birx. I think maybe she was hopeful that there would be something helpful. I'm not so sure, based on his lies, that Fauci ever was optimistic or hopeful that something would help. That's an interesting dynamic I hadn't considered, even though I've heard this testimony several times. If you juxtapose her position versus the lies repeatedly that he has told under oath and outside of and in press conferences, Fauci, wow, there might be a fundamental difference between those two. She is a complete fool for having bought into his lies and deceptions all these decades, but he knows what he's doing.
I would imagine Fauci was sitting there going, "Oh my gosh, you told them what we, you know, like, I mean, you know,
right.
She wasn't coached, you know, right. to be deceptive or coached to not, you know, put herself in a trap. She's openly stating, yeah, we kind of knew this and we saw some stuff in South Africa. But at the time, you know, we hoped it worked. It's kind of like, what?
You know, when she came and spoke to our governor a couple of times or the other governors, I wonder if she voiced to them that position. What I'm about to tell you is based in hope, not science.
So as we've talked about before, Stuart, we don't hate people on the other side.
Right.
I think a lot of people on the other side, especially initially, were trying to do their best. But they, and I'm talking about your typical physician, your typical, even, you know, government official, there's a difference between that and not listening to any dissent or questioning of what they think is the right course. So to me, that's when it changes, is when they close their ears to any questioning of their action.
Right. Well, and you got to include the preachers and priests and rabbis in that group, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the deception is manifest repeatedly, more clearly now than ever. And with that, we want to invite y'all to join us after this break on America Out Loud Pulse. Dr. Jordan Vaughn and I, Stuart Tankersley, are members of Concerned Doctors. You can go to our website, concerneddoctors.org. And we look forward to engaging with you again after this break. And remember, you can go on to the podcast, onto the platform, and send us questions. We want to answer your questions. Please do that. Thank you for joining us.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
You wouldn't go a day without brushing your teeth or washing your hands. What about washing your nose? I mean, your nose does filter the air you breathe. Air loaded with bacteria, viruses, and irritants. Make nasal hygiene part of your routine with Clear. No messy bottles to fill, no drowning sensation. Clear is a natural drug-free saline with the added benefit of xylitol, which blocks bacterial and viral adhesion. Available in stores and online at clear.com. That is XLEAR.com.
We are back. This is Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Dr. Jordan Vaughn on America Out Loud Pulse. We've been talking about hope and talking about some questioning that Jim Jordan did to Dr. Birx. What I'd like to do is just replay it again. And the people that didn't hear it can hear it this evening as well. It's a quick clip. And it happened last week as Jim Jordan was questioning Dr. Deborah Birx again, the blonde scarfed lady at all the task force that you, if you saw her on TV or hear her voice subsequently, you would recognize this.
You're an expert. You were on the task force. You were part of this effort when you were in the previous administration. And you're saying in this administration that you can't rule out the fact that our government was lying to us when they told us the vaccinated could not get the virus.
I don't know about their discussions that they had in the task force. So I can't tell you that. I can tell you as a family member who had individuals that were susceptible, of course we got everybody vaccinated, but we still use layered protection during surges because I knew potentially the vaccine immunity would wane like natural immunity waned. And there was evidence that every 4 months reinfection was occurring in South Africa.
Wow. When the government told us that the vaccinated couldn't transmit it, was that a lie or was that a guess? Or is it the same answer?
I think it was hope that the vaccine would work in that way. And that's why I think scientists and public health leaders always have to be at the table, very clear what we know and what we don't
know. This is important for the country to know. So when I asked the question, when the government told us that the vaccinated couldn't get it, and I asked you if it was a guess or a lie, you said you don't know. You said you think it was hope. So what we do know is it wasn't the truth. So they were either guessing, lying, or hoping and communicating that information to the citizens of this country.
I think they were hoping, but you should know in those original phase 3 trials that were done in this country that we only measured for symptomatic disease. So we weren't proactively testing everybody in those trials to see if they got infected with mild or asymptomatic disease. And so people had to present within the clinical trial.
We never
had the data that it was going to protect against asymptomatic infection.
I'm just struck.
Again, I think the interesting thing there is she at least is honest. But the fact that she says hope and then follows it up with, well, we kind of knew, both from real world situations, as well as the fact that we designed the trial, that we wouldn't find out what we were probably supposed to find out. I'm not sure she designed the trial, so I wouldn't blame it on her, but if your trial isn't
she promoted
going,
it.
Yeah, she promoted it. But if the trial that you're using, to say everybody in the world should get vaccinated, whether they want to or not, meaning that they're mandated, and you know the trial design does not even account for what you're suggesting it accounts for, is concerning.
But she does make a fraudulent statement, and I'd forgotten about this. She says, we know that natural immunity wanes, as does that of the vaccines. Number one, they did not say that the vaccine's immunity would wane, period. They did not.
And they also, at the time, did not know about the natural immunity of infection and
yeah, they did. Remember the article that came out in 2018 from the SARS-1 infected
SARS-1
people?
Yeah. But
Nature
I would say
magazine.
Definitively they didn't know yet, but I mean again, by that it was pretty evident by that time that the people that had gotten it still had antibodies long afterwards. And I'm talking about SARS-CoV-2, but SARS-CoV-1, you're correct. If we were to use SARS-CoV-1 as a blueprint of what SARS-CoV-2 was going to do, we knew that it had lasted an exceedingly long time.
At least 17, 18 years. But remember, SARS-CoV-1 was much more deadly than this one. And so you got protection at least 17 years from a much more deadly virus. I mean, a very, very robust protection from SARS-1. We knew that. For her to assert that we knew that SARS-CoV-2 natural protection immunity is not good is a false statement based on lies and what we've known about virology all along.
And when you compare it to what Walensky said, when she said no one had ever heard about waning, and I am sitting there going, somebody needs to talk to Walensky, here's the craziest thing. Walensky is actually
She's the head of
CDC. Birx is an underling at the NIH. So the underling at the NIH knew something that the head of the CDC had never heard of. You know, she's like, we never heard about waning. And you actually, this goes back to even listening. We can pull up Walensky's comments too.
But Fauci also has talked about it.
Yeah, it's almost as if they were caught off guard. But based on what Birx was saying, they weren't caught off guard. They knew. So it's you know, again, I mean, people can make honest mistakes, but it doesn't seem like people in the position of power, especially somebody at that level. And again, the mRNA technology is not new. It's something that's been out there. It just has never been
deployed.
Yeah, it's never been deployed because it's never worked in a trial.
Right.
If the trial lasts longer than two, you know, if the trial goes the typical time, which is 2 years, you know, that's it basically never was something that was useful or
trials
that they would have approved.
Yeah, trials normally go 2 years, but for biological agents like these vaccines, as they're called, qualify as, it's 5 to 7, I believe.
Yeah, so I'm gonna play Walensky's comments right here just to compare, because again, we're talking about somebody who, you know, had said, you know, Birx knew that there was waning, and then you compare that to what Walensky's about to say.
Well, you know, I think I can tell you where I was when CNN became 95% effective vaccine. So many of us wanted to be hopeful. So many of us wanted to say, okay, this is our ticket out, right? Now we're done. So I think we had perhaps too little caution and too much optimism for some good things that came our way. I really do. I think all of us wanted this to be done.
So again, that's when you're talking about somebody who doesn't have, I guess sometimes in science, I think hope might cloud judgment. But even there, that's quite different than what Birx just said, which is we kind of knew it.
You know, Birx
actually, everything that Walensky just said, if Birx knew it, Birx should have told her.
Right.
Or anyway, who's being truthful here? I think probably Birx is being truthful. Or Walensky is ignorant, but
know, I think those are both probable statements for both. But you know what it seems like? I get the flavor of these kind of comments. Is they're throwing themselves on the pleading for the court of public opinion to be lenient on them on their dastardly deeds, if you will. I think that the flavor of these two is different. Completely different than the flavor you get from Fauci. Fauci is going down in the ship screaming, shaking his fist at God, I'm going down because, I tell you, that's
I think Fauci might
dynamic.
Be, the problem with Fauci is I think Fauci was probably involved in the origin of this whole thing. So I think there's a lot more.
Well, we know that based on Dr. Bergen and Ginger and Peter and Ginger Bregan. Yeah. Their book, best-selling book, Global Predators, COVID-19 Global Predators, We Are the Prey. That is a marvelous book to go into the evidence of what Fauci's been responsible for.
I think Fauci's position is more defensive because he truly is involved in all levels of fraud. And so I guess what I would say, his lies and his deception is deeper. And so saying that he hoped for something with the documents that probably exist saying the opposite, he's a smart enough man to realize that that's not his train out of this mess.
Yeah. And these two are walking it back. It's interesting. We can only hope that it doesn't take 50 years like with Roe v. Wade to overturn the catastrophe. For the court of public opinion to be well aware and apprised of what disaster they have been forced to endure for the sake of a few and their agendas that we would not like. Wow. It's interesting.
I think the interesting thing is actually in some of that questioning, we can probably get to it next week. There's a couple of questions I would have loved Jim Jordan to ask Birx, but Birx also was asked about the WHO and she was one of the biggest supporters of removing funding from the WHO. But then in that statement, she says she still thought the WHO needs to be involved, which is a little bit duplicitous, but I'm probably covering her butt for future engagements. But that is interesting that you never heard Fauci. Fauci is all lovers of, I guess, between him and Bill Gates. I'm not sure who loves the WHO more, but Birx was quick to realize that she had been had by the WHO and that they weren't being honest. Fauci, I don't think either Fauci, and I think this is probably true, part of the deception, or I actually think he's just part of the deception with the WHO. He can't admit that they're not being truthful because he's telling them not to be truthful.
Yeah, exactly. It's important to recognize that Gates and Fauci are trapped in their real evil, in the evilness that they are perpetuating, because they have become sycophants of China and Xi Jinping. It's just amazing that China and what they have done to this world and to their own citizens, of course, is so reprehensible, evil, and vile. If people don't recognize that fundamental issue going forward, it's going to be hard to wrap your arms around what has been done to us. But it's interesting, once again, our hope is in truth. Our hope is in truth.
And our hope is in the eternal. So our hope, I would say, hoping for things of man, I think biblically, is always going to disappoint.
Guaranteed.
So maybe actually what Walensky and Birx were admitting was the Bible is correct. that man's work and man's hopes are will all fall away. So, in this case, they probably just harm more people. But anyway,
Right? It's kind of like the Japanese would send their warriors in World War II. They would send their warriors to fight, and one of the things they would give them is the women in the empire would sew 1,000 stitches. It would be a vest of 1,000 stitches that would supposedly protect them from the enemy's bullets.
Yeah.
That is fraud on the leadership of the military of Japan to expect that to be a reality. That is fraud.
Yes. Yeah.
The hope that the threads of 100 stitches would be enough to stop the penetration of a bullet is fraud.
Just kind of like mask, but anyway.
Right. Kind of like these vaccines.
Could penetrate something very easily.
Right. Yeah, it's just so evil. So evil.
Yeah, and so that goes back. Yeah, false hope. So,
yeah.
But, well, we will end this basic afternoon talking about, really, I think one of the things we will always want to make sure that people know is that our hope is in the only hope there is, which is Jesus and his resurrection, because all other hope is just of man and will never come to fruition. And I think even though as we laugh at some of this hoping, we hope that all of our listeners realize that there is true hope. There is eternal hope. And that comes from the Son of God.
Amen.
So again, this is America Out Loud Pulse. We are always one beat ahead. We are concerned doctors, Dr. Stuart Tankersley, Dr. Jordan Vaughn, and we will see you next week.